Today on the Relationship Renovation Podcast, we talk to Dan Purcell about eyes open sex. We dive into what helps couples reignite passion, communicate openly about sex, and build a stronger sense of intimacy emotionally, physically, and sexually.
Hello, all, and welcome to the Relationship Renovation Podcast. I am Tara Kerwin.
And my name is EJ Kerwin. And today we are super excited to welcome Dan Purcell. He is an intimacy educator. He's the founder of Get Your Marriage On, which is also a popular podcast. Dan's known for helping couples strengthen emotional and sexual connection through playful tools, practical skills, and honest conversations about desire and long-term relationships.
So yes, please.
Welcome, Dan.
Yes, happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, we had a great sort of intro conversation before this, so I think we're all primed and
ready
to talk about intimacy in long-term relationship. It's something our audience, you know, loves to hear about because, as we all know, it's not the easiest thing to be successful at in the long term.
Right.
And I think the topic that we're going to talk about today is something we've actually never had on our podcast. Yeah. And we have like almost 300 episodes out. So yeah. It's a good one. It's a vulnerable one, but yeah. I'm excited that you brought up that topic, Dan.
Yeah. How are you, Dan?
Good. I'm happy to be here.
Well, first, give us a little background on yourself and, you know, how you began helping couples. I mean, what your specialty is. Just give us a quick download of who you are.
Yeah, sounds good. To keep it short and brief, I am probably the last person on the planet I thought I would be here on this episode with you today. I come from a very good background. Parents are great. Family's great. I married well. But when it came to sex and intimacy, it just wasn't something talked about a lot in our homes. And I unknowingly inherited a lot of anxiety about sex into our marriage. So fast forward 13 years, one day I had a conversation with a friend and he opened up to me about his sex life with his wife. And I was so, I guess the best emotion to describe it is morbid curiosity. It's like, ew, gross. Wait, tell me more. And my friend wasn't bragging, but he was telling me that once he and his wife really figured out sexual intimacy in their marriage, like their bond became closer, they're communicating better, they're raising their kids together better, he's making more money at his job, like health is better, like everything in life is improved because their sexual relationship got better. But I really didn't know what to think because that was so like against my beliefs. I thought sex is okay, but you're not supposed to love it or like it because that's like Las Vegas billboard type stuff. Like right. You don't want to like cross the line and go somewhere you don't want to. Yet my friend and his wife are very adventurous. They buy the books. They listen to the podcast. They like really invest. They buy toys and stuff like that. And I really struggled with that. But I worked through it. And long story short, it made such a profound impact on my own marriage. And within a few months, our own marriage was a good marriage, just went to a whole nother level of greatness and had such profound change. It's led to a career change. And now this is what I get to do full time, helping couples. Specifically, I work with Christian couples improve sex and intimacy in their marriage.
This is amazing that it came directly from the success it brought into your marriage, because we know like the best work can be done when you've gone through it yourself and it was so impactful that you now want to help others hopefully get that same impact too. So I love the story. I can't believe you changed your entire profession. But that morbid curiosity, I mean, that is just huge. And so we can't wait to pick your brain today.
I just listened to a podcast the other day talking about all of these studies around couples that have frequent good sex, how lower heart disease, they tend to live 6 to 8 years longer. Like it's not something that I think people were thinking about, you know, 10, 20 years ago, that actually there's like seriously positive impact to having a healthy sexual relationship with your partner.
I want to ask one question because I know like in our own practice, we have dealt with like a lot of maybe religious shame around sexuality. Like what made you choose to like focus with Christian couples and what did you notice about that population?
Well, I'm a Christian myself. And for me personally, the more I dug into my actual theology, this is just my testimony, if you will, is our theology is a very sex-positive theology. But our culture, our Christian culture, isn't necessarily a sex-positive culture. So just because the culture is one way doesn't mean the theology is that way too. But that took me a long time to separate that in my mind, because culture is important.
Right.
But the culture in and of itself doesn't mean that's the theology as well. But another view for me that's helped me recently is more of a developmental view. As we grow and progress psychologically and develop, there are certain principles and things that make sense at a lower level of development. But now at a higher level of development, you can handle more complexity. You view things a little bit differently then. Mm-hmm. I can give you lots of examples of that. And I think good religion helps people across all areas of the entire lifespan of development. But when you're in a culture that tends to reinforce a lower level of developmental thinking, it takes a different mindset to push through to a different level of development and still view things from the same lens. You can't view it from the same lens that you used to at a lower level of development.
Yeah.
But it's part of our spiritual development too.
Oh, I love that.
I think like that's an offshoot of that that we sort of talk about with couples at the beginning of our intimacy series, is that sex is like the thing that we pretty much all do, you know, or want to in committed relationships, but yet we have got the least amount of information, understanding, comfort in talking about of anything, that most of us were brought up being told on some level, don't do it. It's dangerous, especially if you're like our age, when in the 80s, when AIDS was really like prominent, you know, don't do it. It's dangerous. It's bad. And if you are doing it, you know, there's you're breaking, you know, you're sinning. But once you're married, it's beautiful and wonderful, and theoretically you should just, you know, have a great sex life. But like no guidebook whatsoever.
Yeah, there's no higher level thinking there.
No.
It's like, what do I do? Okay, so when you kind of go to that higher level of thinking, or when you're coaching your couples to go to that higher level of thinking, like, what do you notice shifts? Like, what do you see as like the big shift that happens?
Great question. So again, I don't believe in pathologizing people.
Yeah.
But I do think for a lot of couples that I work with, the struggles that they have sexually, they came by them honestly. But the problem is they're trying to fix their current problems using the current model. And Einstein said it this way: you can't solve a problem at the same level of thinking you use to create the problem. You have to elevate your thinking, elevate your intelligence to solve that problem. Buckminster Fuller said something else. I'm going to slaughter his quote, but it's like, instead of trying to fix a system at its current level, you have to create a new model that makes the old model obsolete.
Yeah.
And that's how you fix systems. So when I work with a couple, I look at them as a system.
Right.
What is their current quote unquote solution that's keeping the problem in place over and over and over again? And we have to like apply a different model that they aren't thinking about that helps them solve the problem on their own.
Can I give you a good one that like a lot of our listeners reach out to, and like, what do? When sex becomes routine and it like happens at night, and like usually if it's a heterosexual couple, like the female's exhausted and it's like, I just had a couple yesterday. She's like, it's by the time it's 11:30, kids are down. He's like, let's go. She's like, there's no way. But there's, right, because they have a two-year-old now, there's no new novelty or anything. So like, how would you help a couple? Have you had that scenario?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Absolutely.
Give us a little example of like what might you say to help that couple?
Well, if you Google online the advice, it would be like negotiate, compromise, find somewhere to meet, schedule the sex. Like, I think those all could help. But if you're still at the current level, you're still at that system that you're operating within, you might see a little bit of success for a short term, but it's not going to make a big impact. So in that scenario, I would it would depend on the couple and a lot more. But
sure.
Let's just take my own experience. I have six children. I know what it's like to be like in the mood when my wife is exhausted after a long day. Well, first thing is, what do I do that interferes with my wife's ability to say yes? And sometimes it's my over-eagerness gets in the way of her saying yes. So that's hard.
Yeah.
Second is viewing sex as like an on-off switch, like we either did it or we didn't.
Yeah.
Rather than viewing it more like a dimmer switch where there's all different levels of sexual intimacy in it.
I love that.
The other thing too is learning how to see the whole person as a whole person rather than what they do for you and how they reinforce you. And what I mean by that is, like, I remember one time I wanted to have sex. My wife didn't because it was late. It was tired. And it was one of my better moments. And I said, Emily, what sounds pleasurable for you tonight? Instead of, can we have sex?
Oh, yeah. That was a good question
because I really wanted to give her pleasure. I wanted her to help her relax. My heart was really invested in her. And if sex happened, I would be thrilled. But I would, I could also be okay enough that if it didn't happen, it's still okay because I really cared about her. And I guess she could feel that caring energy, like that I cared about her, not about the sex that she provides.
Yes.
And she's like, you know what? I'm not open for sex, but I could probably cuddle naked for a little bit. So we cuddled naked. And then desire showed up. And it ended up being great. So that's like another responsive desire pattern alive in our relationship in that moment. But it's not because that was like the goal. The goal was, can we invest together? And it had a happy ending in this scenario. But even if it didn't end that way, it would still be a success because I was solid in my approach.
I think you nail something there, and it's something I relate to, and it's actually like comes out of not really a conversation that Tara and I had last night about sex, but about just, you know, being attuned to one another. And I think that oftentimes Tara feels that it's just that I want to meet my need, not that I want to connect. And it seems very selfish. And I think that that is what a lot of couples, especially in that sort of higher, lower, you know, desire dynamic, is that the other person doesn't think you want to connect with them or you want to love them or you want to have this shared loving experience. They just think you want something from them. And that's not, one, it's not sexy. And it's also like Tara feels that like, everybody wants something from her. The dogs want her to feed them. The kids want
everything.
Everything from her. Like I want, you know, employees want.
Yeah.
And I just become another person that just wants something. Never mind if you go even deeper into like, you know, trauma and everything else. It's just like it's a really bad dynamic that we still are struggling.
But I would say, Dan, what you said. So in our intimacy series, part four, we talk about instead of seeing sex as an obligation, it's more of an energetic connection. And so when you're coming into the bedroom and instead of asking for sex, you're asking for connection.
Mm-hmm.
And like in that moment, it was like, hey, Emily, what would feel pleasurable tonight? And I love that. And I think that people often like mean that, but it comes out wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it just reinforces that pattern of like sex is an obligation. I mean, I have couples who like they'll have sex like on a Sunday. They're like, oh my God, I have a whole week where we have to do it again. So my anxiety's down. And I'm like, oh, we're going to talk about that because we don't want our couples to view sex as this chore, this obligation. It is a chance for connecting in the most deeply vulnerable way, which is actually the topic that we haven't even got to today, is eyes open during sex.
No, I mean, but that's, you did a great job there of like, let's create a transition into being a little more specific because I think people like that. And the concept that you thought would be great to talk about is eyes open sex. Is that
Yeah.
Tell us, help us understand.
So there have been times I've had sex where it was kind of like a just check it off.
Mm-hmm.
We say we did it. We even had orgasms that we shared. It felt great. And then there's other times we've had sex where it's very soulful.
Yeah.
I can't think of another word, but
I like that.
I am here, you are there. And the barrier between us is like diminishing. Mm. And I see you and you see me, we're together in this. And to contrast those experiences, orgasm may not happen in the second one, but it's not about orgasm exchange. It's really about like being really present with each other and being in it. Yeah. So to me, the concept of eyes open sex is this. I think a lot of couples would really struggle to have sex with their eyes open. And I see that literally, right? Like that means they're seeing me, seeing my body. Gravity is doing its thing. Cellulite is doing its thing. Like, can you just
totally
turn off the lights? Or can we just do this? And we only do this one position because it shows my good side. Like there's that aspect of it. But I think it's a little bit deeper in that I really want you to see me. I really want to see you. I really want to be with who you are. I want to expose myself, not just my body, but my mind and my spirit, and be with this person. So sex, I believe, is inherently anxiety-inducing because you're naked and your bodies are pressed against each other. So your brain's going to go, you know, high alert. Yeah. It just is. And the way we handle anxiety, it differs depending on your level of development. So because it's an anxious activity, I think it's normal for couples to just want to get through the act. This is where you hear of couples saying, we have sex, but there's not a lot of foreplay.
Yeah.
It's not because both don't want to do foreplay. One person in the marriage wants to do a lot of foreplay, but the other's like, no, let's hurry on. Let's skip to penetration and let's get it over with. Partially because it feels very exposing to be in the foreplay setting because there's a little more heart exchange, a little more soul exchange. And that's a anxious place to be in because you're being seen.
Yeah.
So your ability to tolerate the anxiety of closeness is a direct relation to your ability to be close to someone in that sexual act.
The ability to tolerate closeness with someone. Because that's probably one of the first things you might ask one of your clients, right? Like, what is your ability to tolerate closeness? Because for a lot of us, we learn to just protect ourselves from the other person, especially, right? We do couples counseling. So it's like, by the time they get to us, it's like, I don't even want to look at you.
Yeah.
Don't even sit near me. They're like sitting at the opposite ends of the couch. So I've got to guess then one of the first things you might do is get at an individual level, a comfort level, or tools to regulate anxiety for that closeness.
Yes.
I'm just guessing.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And one is an eye gazing exercise. You talked about this a little bit before.
Yes.
And I want to hear that story if you're willing to share again.
Yeah, we actually did a podcast on this. I can't remember. It was years ago, but in 2022, we went to Dr. Stan Tatkin's couples retreat. And right, they call him the mad scientist of couples because he's just amazing and he's done all this research. And we had to sit there for like 12 hours a day. There was 12 other couples and we didn't have to look at him. He's like, don't look at me. I don't want you to look at me. You're not here for me, even though we thought we were. He's like, you're going to be looking at each other. And I was like, what? For that long? For that many minutes, like minutes felt like hours. And I remember our very first exercise in our very first like workshop setting, I was so riddled with anxiety having to look.
Super uncomfortable for you.
Having to look into EJ's eyes and like see him and him, like in our souls bearing each other. God, and I'm someone that's like been doing couples counseling for 20 years and I feel like I was comfortable in my skin, but never, right? We were presented with this having to do eye contact, right? And so when do we ever force eye contact with each other? We don't. Like we get our stuff done during the day. We talk, we do our couples therapy, we raise our kids.
But isn't it interesting? Like eye contact is like so important to you when we're in conflict. Like if I switch my eyes away from you at all, it like...
You're leaving me.
Drives you crazy.
Yeah.
But yet in intimate moment of like us wanting to trying to connect, you're not comfortable with that.
But that's when Dan, and I'm sure like this comes up for you with your coaching clients, but like that's when I realized how much I'm a victim of childhood sexual abuse, how much that played into our intimate role. So I'm glad I got to learn that because it's really scary and I would go into fight or just
almost or disassociate or whatever to get through it. Right.
Absolutely. And so it was really good that EJ and I can develop that safety through eye contact because he's probably the first person in my whole life, I'm 49, that I've actually had eyes open during intimacy. Mm-hmm. Our Relationship Renovation at Home Manual for Couples is now available on Amazon for $24.99. Check it out. It's going to be so helpful. It's going to be giving you all of the skills and tools we talk about on our podcast. So please go check it out. Your relationship is so worth this. I have couples look at each other in session, and that's hard for them.
Yes.
Let alone in the bedroom. But like, what are the things people report when you first start kind of giving them this exercise?
Well, some of them have a really hard time with it.
Yeah.
It's because it's uncomfortable. And it's kind of interesting. As a young adult, I lived in Japan. And you'd ride the trains, subways, buses, and it's like packed with people. You're body to body in rush hour. But the moment you like make eye contact with the person next to you, it gets instantly uncomfortable. Like you can be body to body with someone, but I don't know. Is it the eyes are the window to the soul, as Shakespeare said? Like
right.
There's something about bringing soul to soul in that is hard. Now, there are other exercises. If eye gazing is hard for you, there's other ones. These are more taken from the tantric tradition. But one is called hugging. Hugging Till Relaxed is developed by Dr. David Schnarch.
Yeah.
Oh, Dr. Schnarch, The Passionate Marriage.
Yeah. And it was so fun. I read that book and we're on our way to a family reunion and just observing how people hug and just the immense amount of information that is being passed in a hug. Like you see that one aunt that everyone like kind of, she's the very huggy one. And people are like, you know, like kind of protect their body as she comes close by. And then you have the other one that's like just fist bumping, like, yeah, just kind of keeping their distance. Oh, yeah, it's just a very short, like, right? And then there's the embrace, like someone that I'm just so happy. This is like the grandma, the matriarch of the family. And she's like, just so happy you're here. Like there's so much information conveyed in a hug. So couples can hug and just hug as a meta exercise, as a microcosm of the dynamic of their relationship, because how you hug and what goes on in the hug, what information is transferred in the hug, is very telling of how you two handle the intimacy of closeness in your relationship.
Yeah. I like that.
I love that. I think we've somebody else was talking about how like holding on to the hug and waiting to that moment for each of you that you finally relax.
Yeah, right.
You know, that if you just hug, there's this sort of like silent waiting to get away instead of waiting to finally come together. I know our hugs in the kitchen a lot of the time are like that, where it's like,
because they're in the morning when the kids are trying to get to school. Come
it
on,
feels
honey.
Like, it feels like not even a hug sometimes.
The drive-by hug.
Yeah, it feels like the drive-by hug where it's just like, it's cursory. Mm-hmm. And the moments where we actually spend a moment and actually like wait, it's like 10 seconds, 12 seconds. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, and then it feels like home and it feels safe and it feels like truly connecting.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that's like the other thing is like when we have that, whether it's a hug or a peck or even the type of sex where it is that rush get through it, it starts to get really like unsatisfying.
Yeah.
And you almost then start avoiding it. Like I would say, like you start avoiding that hug because you're like, well, it's ultimately not going to be satisfying.
Probably.
It's not going to feel like connection.
It could actually create a pursuer distancer relationship because
absolutely.
One probably will avoid and the other will probably like, wait, that hug wasn't enough. It's not fulfilling.
Yeah. and I could see how it would be also really confusing and disruptive in like, okay, can I share a little bit? Is it personal? Is this okay?
I think so.
Okay. Like where my sort of like frustration with the hug and not feeling really connected and maybe Tara's feeling of the same thing in like sex and intimacy, where it's like in different areas, each person is slightly not satisfied with the experience, but they're linked too, right? Like the hug to the sex mm-hmm. is important, or the kind speech or mm-hmm. or whatever. And like people start getting misaligned because there's these areas where one person is like, oh, I'm okay with this. Well, this is the part where actually I don't like it. You know, where it gets like really confusing in this overarching like arch of intimacy mm-hmm. that we're not talking about in specific. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that takes such like intentionality and something like what you're talking about, this eyes open sex or you talked about it earlier. It's bigger than just sex. Mm-hmm. Is like, how do we create this like eyes open, really seeing and being connected across the spectrum of our intimate connection?
So that we can have that higher level.
So we can have it all.
Yeah. All, yes.
Don't we want it? I think that's part of it is like we want it all. Like, I want to hug you. I want to have that other more deeply intimate side. Yeah. I want to be able to talk to you in a way where you feel safe and loved, you know, and they're all intermingled together and they gum each other up.
Well, and what I hear Dan saying is, our daughter has been diagnosed with OCD, so she goes through exposure therapy.
Yeah,
and it feels like that's kind of the tools
that's the intervention,
you start to give couples. It's like, okay, start with this hug if that feels okay, or maybe start with like a non-sexual massage, and that you almost start to like get comfortable with different levels of exposing yourself vulnerably.
Well, it's because you learn how to self-regulate better.
Yeah.
So if I'm in a hug and I feel my anxiety starting to build, if I can learn how to just regulate myself better without disconnecting, right? You have to stay in it.
Yeah, and how can you help a couple have a healthy sex life if you skip over the hug?
Yeah, right.
If you skip over the eye contact, if you skip over...
Yeah.
The communication that's kind and loving and supportive and attuned.
Well, you know what's interesting, Dan? Like, I'm just putting this together. Like, we have, right, our couples go through this relationship renovation model. It's like 4 to 6 months. And you see a ton of dropout at the intimacy series. Because, like, we are like, we got to build emotional safety. We have to make sure we have healthy communication skills. We're understanding all of this. And it's like they learn all these things and then they get to the intimacy series piece of it. It's probably like 3 months in. And I think like it gets to that point where like, oh my gosh, now we have to really, like we've been able to do like the communication stuff. Cool. And then it gets into like the really vulnerable and it's like not a lot, but a third. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do we help couples stay in that so that they can have that mm-hmm. freaking deep intimacy that we all deserve and that freedom of expression and playfulness and desire and eroticism, like you name it.
Right.
Right. It's just like, I think there's such a fear behind it. So I love that you're helping couples that have those types of fears be in it in a different way.
Yeah.
And like just talking to you, I can feel how safe you are for people because I feel very safe with you. And I think that's really important too.
Yeah.
Like you have your own experience through it, which I can relate now. And you're not preaching from the mountaintop, like this is what it should be like. It sounds like you're very supportive of like the individual differences for the sake of the couple as well.
Right. Right. I have one more thought on this that I think will help, that's helped me, that might help listeners too. And you said it earlier, and I agree 100%. We want to have sexual experiences where we feel really connected with each other. Mm-hmm. And that being said, sex can be very connecting. So because we want to connect with our spouse, we should have sex. It makes it's a very logical step, right? Let's have sex so that we feel connected. Mm. The issue that I see couples have is they're having a lot of sex, but the connection's still not there. Mm-hmm. And it's because when you approach sex to extract connection out of the sex, it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah.
You're putting the cart before the horse. Whereas if you learn how to connect first and then move in to like let the sex organically flow from there while maintaining that connection, I think that's when sex is the most connecting.
Well, I think that's what's so hard about the whole like looping it into modern married life is like when we basically have just like parallel function throughout the day. Right. And we just kind of like we were, you know, we had that drive-by hug this morning, and then we just kind of got everything that needed to get done. And then suddenly it's 11 p.m. and it's the only time where you actually have the like physical space to have sex, but you haven't been connected all day. And I think that's something that like Tara and I have talked tons about, where she's just like, we need to go out. We need to cultivate this space because it's too disjunctured, you know. And just because I have more, you know, basically testosterone flowing through my system, that it just makes it easier to flip the switch.
Right.
It's not fair, and it's certainly not effective to think that that's going to be the space where it happens. Like,
Well, and I have to say this because I'm sure you hear this. Like, EJ's like, well, I just feel more connected to you after sex. And I'm like, good for you, because I don't. Like, that is not my experience. My experience is that, like, it's the same. And so, right, just I hope that was okay.
No, it's okay.
I mean, I love that you feel more connected after sex, but that's not my experience, because exactly that. Like, right, I think a lot of people think, like, if we have that, then I'll feel more connected.
Well, this is where we get into that, and we talked about this in our series a lot. This is where we get into that whole discrepancy and sort of like transactional thing, where that's, you hear that from a lot of men. A lot of men say, I feel more connected when we have sex. And then you hear a lot of women say, I feel connected when through emotional safety and, you know, and non-sexual affection. And so then it becomes about like, well, okay, well, like who pours into the other person's bucket first? You know, and it's like, and then guys get really like, okay, well, how much? Like, okay, so if how many days,
what's the minimum
or weeks
we need here?
Or months, do I need to do
what's
so that I feel and I mean, and the hard thing is that it's for both people. Is the one person, Tara's like, I can't get to that place to express that type of affection towards you unless this is poured into my bucket. And I think it's just as legitimate on the other side of it, the higher desire partner who's like, well, I have a hard time expressing that non-sexual affection and being emotionally present if we're not having sex. And so it becomes this really horrible tug of war, you know? So help us there a little bit. Like, how do
you conceptualize
that?
All right. This is how I would untangle that knot. So first is, let's not discount the gift of being the higher desire spouse. Like you mentioned, you have more testosterone. I do too. But let's see it for the gift it can bring to a marriage. There is so much powerful goodness that can come from great sex and sexual investment. And because you want to have sex with someone, just like a kiss or a hug or eye gazing, sex in and of itself is a very powerful language. It can convey so much. And you can bring a lot of goodness to another person, like to your wife, through your healthy sexuality. So it's good that you want to have sex. Second is, I think for a lot of people, sex is a very validating experience, especially for the higher desire spouse. It's like, she, if we're using, you know, stereotypes here, she said yes, and we had sex, and it felt really good. I feel loved. I feel seen. I feel heard. It's a very validating thing. So when some people say, I find sex very connecting, even though she feels very disconnected in the experience, I think what a more truthful way of saying it is, I feel very validated in the experience. I like the validation that sex gives. But if you're still two ships passing the night, one says, I felt very connected afterwards, and the other didn't, for most of the cases, I think they're really chasing a validation frame, not so much a did we really connect soul to soul frame. Because you can tell when someone's not really in it for you, or when someone's really not with you in any moment. So Dr. Steven Snyder, he wrote a great book years ago called Love Worth Making. And he teaches this concept for busy couples called the two-step. I love this. And it's really simple. But step one is everything that we've been discussing. It's learning how to connect first. But he takes a very nuanced approach is in order to connect with someone else, you have to kind of connect with yourself first. Mm-hmm. So he tells a story of a woman who sex always felt like an obligation for her. Then she started doing yoga. She's busy with kids and everything, started making time for yoga. And after a good yoga workout, she found she had more sexual arousal just within her own body because she felt good. But as soon as her husband came in the picture, she couldn't hold on. Huh. Like arousal wasn't the same.
Yeah.
So the step one was learn how to hold on to that feeling she got from yoga in the presence of her spouse. So what she did is they made a routine before going to bed. They're going to undress and be naked in bed. And it doesn't mean they have to have sex, but they're going to talk about their day. They're going to eye gaze. They're going to touch. They're going to talk. They're going to be a couple and be naked in it. And just that it brought her back to how she felt after yoga, just really connected with herself and connected with a spouse. And then after weeks of that, she's like, Dr. Snyder, step one's going great. What's step two? He's like, well, have sex. But hold on to that feeling into the but she kind of struggled to hold on to the connection in sex right off. And it's like, what, I failed. What do I do next? Well, go back to step one. It's like, I could do that. So I think couples, if they create routines or ways for them to just be together, be ideally without clothing, but a way to just kind of settle, then I think the connectedness of sex, you hold on to that feeling, it'll just organically follow into a very eyes open, very emotionally connecting sexual experience organically.
And it seems like the big key component there is something that we talk to couples about. It's something we definitely have worked on between the two of us is the lack of expectation. That when there's expectation mixed in there, like why would the low desire partner ever want to enter into that vulnerable place of taking their clothes off? Mm-hmm. If they think like, well, the expectation is once I do this, I'm having to do something that I don't want to do, you know? And that's a big one too, because it's hard. What's the difference between, like you said it earlier when you were talking about an incident between you and what your wife of, what's the difference for, you said like, I was okay if we didn't, I would have been delighted if we did.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's hard for the other partner to read the difference between an expectation and a like, but if it did, I'd be okay with that. Like, I don't think that's easy for you to discern the difference between it, right?
Probably.
I think when you're married for a long time, your spouse can, generally speaking, map you better than you can map yourself. They can map, I use the word map, but like they can track your motivations far more clearly than you can map yourself. Because our brains like to, like my brain, of course, I'm only in it for the most purest, best motive ever. But that's my self-deception at play. I think our spouse can really tell. Oh, yeah. So sometimes you really got to lean in. I think what made that time different is my wife could feel the difference.
Yeah.
That it felt true.
That it was really about an investment in her, not about.
What would feel pleasurable to you?
I could tell to her I'm blue in the face, like, no, I really, really want this for you. But if she can still track something about it that's not lining up for her, I think she might get the more accurate picture of what's really going on rather than what I think is going on. And trying to convince her that she's crazy because she's not agreeing with the way I want her to perceive me.
It's got to be genuine.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
This is amazing.
This has been really...
You're amazing.
It's, you know, I think like one of the things that's been wonderful about today is we talked about sex. I mean, we really talked about sex. We didn't kind of do that whole thing of like generalizing it into intimacy. We talked a lot about sex and it was also very just like, you know, normal. And I think that's what's missing. That's what people really struggle with is just talking about sex. Like it's just another thing because even though it's wonderful, it really is just another thing we should just be able to talk about in like a rational, open-hearted, vulnerable way, like, you know. And so it was nice to be a part of that with you. We appreciate that.
Thanks. Yeah.
You picked the right career.
Well, you two are great hosts. This is a fantastic work that you're doing.
Thank you. Well, please, like, tell our audience, because if there's somebody who's listening and is like, I just really connect with Dan. I really love what he's saying, love how he's saying it. You know, how can they get a hold of you, and what are the types of things that you're offering?
Well, I have a gift for your listeners. So if you go to getyourmarriageon.com/renovation, it's for the Relationship Renovation Podcast. I will email you a bunch of awesome stuff. I have like 101 creative ways to initiate sex guide I'll send you. I have another 101 creative ways to make sex fun and exciting. Just like really fun ways to like break up your routine. I have a mobile app called Intimately Us and another one called Just Between Us that are really intended for couples to improve sexual intimacy when they're together and then when they're apart. And I have a jumpstart guide for anyone that's like, hey, I want to know a little more about kind of these topics we talked about. Like, I have all that. So getyourmarriageon.com/renovation.
Okay. And you can drop down in the show notes.
Great.
I'll make sure it's there and you can just click that when you hear or watch this.
And thank you for that, Dan.
Yeah, Dan, thank you so much. This has just been a real pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you all for listening. We hope today's conversation was just helping you kind of think more, gain more awareness, and just like really recognizing that we all deserve to have amazing, deeply loving, intimate relationships and really good sex.
Yes.
So as always, take care of yourself, take care of each other. Bye-bye.
Me and you just singing on the train. Me and you listening to the rain. Me and you, we are the same.